Welcome back to the WBH Radio Podcast. I'm your host, William Holly. This is episode number two of the new year. I got to change the venue today. I'm recording at the Brooklyn Public Library. It's good to see my tax dollars being put to good use, man. The facility's not too bad here. Yo, last weekend we had a lot of football. NFL first round playoffs. But not much of it was good. Luckily, the college kids saved us Monday night, man. That national championship game was a great game to watch. Alabama versus Georgia. Alabama pulling it out 26-23. Yo, one day we could debate whether or not college kids should get paid and if the NCAA is good for them or bad. But yo, I don't think we could deny that the championships they put together is spectacular. You know, that's a great stage for the guys to play on. Yo, when those college bands come out, I get hyped, man. I'm ready to suit up and play no matter what the sport. Football, basketball, baseball, they just do a really good job. But, yo, the story of that game was Alabama's freshman quarterback coming off the bench and helping them win the game. You know, Tua Tagovailoa. Oh, snap, I pronounced it correct. He finished the game going 14 for 24, 166 yards, three touchdowns and an interception. But those stats don't tell a story, man. What I was impressed with was the fact that he hadn't started a game all year. And then he came off the bench in the biggest game of the year and helped them win. That was just absolutely phenomenal, you know. That's a level of fearlessness that I think we all could aspire to have. And, you know, it wasn't easy for him from the jump. He threw an early interception. And when we make mistakes, it's easier for us to get a little gunshot, play it close to the vest, but not him. And he just helped propel his team to victory, and that was phenomenal. Yeah, I was trying to learn about this guy during the game. Like, yo, who is this? So I'm looking online, and somebody made a joke on Twitter and said, yo, congratulations, Tua. You just got a Wikipedia page in the third quarter. So, I mean, the whole world wanted to know who this guy was. But I did find some pieces on him. And one talked about when he was recruited to play for Alabama. You know, they were asking, why would you go to Alabama when they already have a quarterback in place? You know, the likelihood of you playing are slim to none. And he says something along the lines of, yo, life is about competition. No matter where you go, what you do, whether it's a job, it's a classroom, it's sports, you have to compete. Yo, I was blown away by that. You don't hear that type of stuff anymore. My boy Kayvon Baker, shout out to Coach Baker. He runs some basketball tournaments in Brooklyn in the summer. And I go out there, I mess with the kids, talk to them, and I'm like, yo, how come you didn't go to this school or that school? And they'll say something to me like, yo, I didn't go to that school because, you know, they already have a player in place and coach couldn't guarantee me a starting spot. I'm like, what? You coming out of eighth grade going into high school and somebody's supposed to guarantee you a starting spot? What happened to competition? What happened to going into practice every day and earning your spot? You know, I remember being in high school, we'd be in the lunchroom looking over at the other table like, oh, okay, those are the guys that's supposed to be good around here? Well, we'll see when practice come around. So to hear that level of that willingness to compete from Tua at a young age, oh, it makes sense why he was able to go on the biggest stage and perform under the brightest lights. That kid is fearless, man. He's from Hawaii, of Samoa descent. Them Samoa guys, they about their faith, family, and getting the job done. You know, whether it was Troy Polamalu with the Steelers or Marcus Mariota, somebody I'll talk about a little bit later. They just there to handle business. No jokes, no games. So it was great to see him get the job done. Much was made about how Jalen Hurts, the Alabama quarterback that was replaced, how he handled the situation. How he handled being benched with class and he was cheering on his teammates. Yo, I wouldn't expect anything less from him, man. He's just a college kid. He's only in his sophomore year himself. All of this stuff is icing on the cake. Guys usually don't play to their junior year. And here he is playing in his second national championship. Of course he's going to cheer on his teammates, man. Like, what else is there to do? At the end of the day, when they take that championship picture, there's no stats. Just all of them, a bunch of winners. So I wasn't surprised that he was willing to do whatever it took to help his team win. And it also shows a level of accountability from Jalen Hurts. Jalen knows he had his opportunities. He knows it. So for him to pout and be mad at his coach or his teammates, that'd be wrong, man. Always tell the young players, are you mad? Are you mad enough to do something about it? You know, it's not about pouting. If you really want your spot, it takes place in the gym. Get better. Work on your craft. And I'm sure Jalen Hurts is going to do that this offseason. And he'll be back. competing for a starting gig next year. The other story I was paying attention to is there was a set of brothers, Riley Ridley, he's a wide receiver for Georgia, and then Calvin Ridley for Alabama. Two brothers playing on opposing teams in a national championship. And they were saying that those guys talk every day, but the last week leading up to the game, they hadn't spoken. And they asked one of the players, like, how come you didn't speak to your brother? One of them was like, yo, he ain't called me, so I ain't calling him. But finally, at the end of the game, you could check it out on YouTube, they finally spoke, and they actually exchanged jerseys, which is pretty cool, you know. Both of their last names on the back of the jersey, giving it to your brother, embracing, you know. Win, lose, or draw, that family won that night. They playing on the world stage. Everybody could see it. Both of those kids probably make it to the pros, be able to make a living playing a game that they love. Shout out to the Ridley brothers. But the last story coming out of the national championship is the one and only Nick Saban, head coach for Alabama. Monday night, he won his sixth national championship, which ties him for number one with some guy named Bear Bryant. I don't know. I don't go that far back in history. So, Nick Saban, you got six national championships. What you going to do now? Nick, you the smartest dude in college football. It's time to move on. It's time to come back to the big leagues and the NFL. See, Nick Saban used to be in the NFL, but he kind of ran away. You know, he coached for the Miami Dolphins. And in his last year, reporters started to ask him, yo, Nick, are you going to return to college football and take the Alabama job? And Nick Saban adamantly denied it. Yo, I'm not. I'm here. I'm a Miami Dolphin. But soon after the season was over, pew, Nick Saban was back in Alabama. Back in Alabama. And the thing with Nick Saban is many people describe him as a control freak. And they say he ran from the NFL because you can't control those NFL players. You know, they have more power than the coaches. It's not like college where these kids are coming from their mama's basement and they willing to listen to anything and everything you have to say. No, in the NFL, you gotta catch more flies with honey. You can't just strong arm the NFL players. And they say that drove Nick Saban crazy. Well, Nick, is that what you want your reputation to be? That you ran back to college football because it was easier? That's soft, man. Now, maybe that's just my New York bias because we don't really do college football. But yo, Nick, I think now is the time for you to return to the NFL. You are, yes, you're the big man on college, but there's people who have done, there's only three people, I think, that have won a national championship and a Super Bowl. That's an elite class, Nick. If I was you, I'd try to go for those ranks. And now is the time, too, because there's some quality jobs that are open. You know, everybody knows the NFL is a quarterback league. Well, the Indianapolis Colts job is open. They got Andrew Luck. If you take a job in the NFL, you would want to be with a premier franchise. Well, guess what? The New York Giants job is open. And say what you want about Matt Stafford in Detroit. He's getting paid like a number one quarterback. That job is open, Nick Saban. You know, I believe you are a truly smart dude. But every time I've seen a smart dude or seen somebody be the smartest guy in the room, you know what they do? They try to find a different room to be in, to be challenged. Yo, on Jay-Z's last album, 444, he said, I'm the realest dude rapping. But then he said, yo, that's like being the tallest midget. You know, it's not something to be proud of. You know, rappers, I did that already. I want to be over here with the builders and the billionaires and the businessmen. So I may have been happy being the number one rapper 10 years ago, but I'm off that. Y'all can have that title. I'm moving on to the next challenge. So what's up, Nick? The time is now, buddy. You did that college football thing. It's time for the next chapter. Take a break. Be right back. WBH Radio Podcast. I'm your host, William Holly. I mentioned last weekend that the NFL started its playoffs. Not much of it was good, though. There was a few folks I wanted to highlight. Y'all like watching those shows, Dateline and First 48, where they go over murders that took place and they tell you the story. But one of my pet peeves is when the detective, he lets the spouse or the significant other know that their partner has passed away. And then the detective says, man, I was pretty suspicious of the husband because when I told him his wife died, he didn't respond the way I thought he should. What? Who are you to determine how somebody should respond? We all react differently. We all prepare differently. And the story on the Tennessee Titans quarterback, Marcus Mariota, is that he may be less of a leader because he doesn't get riled up. He doesn't have rah-rah speeches. He's quiet. I remember being in the college basketball locker room. You know, you got 10 different teammates. All 10 of us are preparing differently. One of us is in the corner getting angry, cursing at the other team. My man DA might be next to me dancing to Sizzla. Like, everybody is different. And Marcus Mariota, he is a quiet dude, but he's a winner, and he proved that last weekend. He was able to help his team beat the Chiefs 22-21. Marcus Mariota went 19 for 31 with 205 yards and two touchdowns and an interception. You know, pretty pedestrian numbers, but he definitely passed the eye test. Yo, he was throwing to his receivers. His receivers couldn't separate from a defender. How can you throw a pass to your receivers and they don't get open? So that explains why his numbers weren't the greatest. But he still willed his team to a victory. In fact, he threw a touchdown pass to himself. Yo, that's not a joke. He really threw a touchdown pass to himself. He threw the pass. The defender blocked it. And Mariota caught the deflection and ran into the end zone for a touchdown. Impressive, yo. And at the end, towards the end of the game, he handed the ball off to his running back. His running back was about to get stopped by the defense. And Mariota threw a block. Quarterbacks don't throw blocks. Mariota threw himself, threw a block for his teammate, and opened up the field so his teammate could run it for a touchdown. Yo, when the guys on the bench saw that, they jumped up and mobbed Mariota. Like, yo, that's what we're talking about. So whether Marcus Mariota wins or loses from here on out, it doesn't matter. I don't want to hear about him not being a leader. Leadership is not about rah-rah speeches. It's can you inspire your guys through your play also. And that's what he did. If you saw how hype his teammates got after he threw that block, you would know that he's a leader. His teammates were ecstatic. They were thinking like, yo, we got another week of per diem. We going to get another share of playoff money. So they don't question that dude, man. Shout out to Mariota. The Chiefs, though, man, that was a tough loss for them. I'm sure they wish they could have that back. Coach Andy Reid, questionable play calling in the second half. You got the number one rusher in the league, and he only gets 5 carries in the second half? Man, I'm no rocket scientist, but I know you got to give it to your best players. You got to give it to your best players. He put the ball in the hands of his quarterback, Alex Smith. Alex Smith is okay. He's somebody that could do a decent job, but he may not be the guy to get you over the top, you know? He had playmakers around him, put the ball in their hands. In fact, Alex Smith, he used to play for the 49ers, and he helped his team get to the conference finals, which is pretty decent. But his coach said, you know what? I think our team is better than that. So his coach replaced him. Replaced him with a guy named Colin Kaepernick. You know, that's when we first got introduced to Kaepernick. And that following year, Kaepernick got the team to the Super Bowl. So Alex Smith is a decent quarterback, but I don't know if he's the guy that's going to get you over the top. And lastly, from the NFL weekend, got to talk about my man Cam Newton. Cam Newton and his Panthers came up short against the Saints. Cam, this seems to be the story of your career, buddy. Not being able to finish these games. You know, he had a decent stat line, 376 yards and 2 touchdowns. Yo, Cam Newton, at some point in your career, you got to get tired, sick and tired of being sick and tired. You know, there can no longer be excuses. Cam supporters might say, yo, in fact, I thought this at one point. Cam doesn't have the help. He doesn't have the receivers. But then I said, hold up, wait. On the other side of the field for the Saints, there was a player named Ted Ginn Jr. Ted Ginn had 4 catches for 115 yards. In fact, he had the biggest play of the game, which was an 80-yard touchdown. Do you know who Ted Ginn played for the previous year? He played for the Panthers. Cam Newton was his quarterback. So, Cam, you claim that you don't have the help, or your fans claim that you don't have the help. Yet we see other quarterbacks doing a better job with the weapons that you have. Ted Ginn Jr., when he was with Cam Newton, they had a 50% completion rate. I mean, when Cam threw the ball his way, it only came up with 50% of the catches. When Drew Brees did it, who is his quarterback now, they have a 70% catch rate. I don't know, Cam. You've had the weapons. And that's not the first time we've seen that. There's a guy named Steve Smith Sr. who used to play with Cam Newton. Steve Smith might be my favorite player. He was just a tough wide receiver. His last year with Cam Newton was in 2015. Steve Smith had 745 yards with four touchdowns for the season. You know, the organization thought he was done, thought he was slowing down, so they let him move on. Steve Smith showed up in Baltimore that next season, playing for the Ravens with quarterback Joe Flacco, and he had 1,065 yards with six touchdowns. That's 300-plus more yards with the other quarterback. Yo, Cam, you can't continue to say you don't have enough. And it just came down that Cam Newton, well, the Panthers, they fired Cam Newton's offensive coordinator, Mike Shula, and his quarterback coach, Ken Dorsey. Yo, Cam, those were the same guys you had when you won the MVP. Did they all of a sudden forget to coach? Those are the same guys you had when your team reached the Super Bowl. All of a sudden, they don't know what they're doing? Nah, they were just made out to be the scapegoat. Yo, you ever seen Cam argue with the defensive players? Yo, he's towering over them. He's the biggest dude on the field at the quarterback position. The physical attributes cannot be denied. So what's missing? It's got to be the studying. It's got to be the attention to detail. Cam, you make the big plays, but in between, what do you give us? In between the big plays, there's still a lot of football, and that is just as important. And I think that's where he's lacking. I don't know. Take a quick break. WBH Radio Podcast. I'm your host, William Holly. Want to get into John Gruden and his $100 million contract. But before we get into that, I want to talk about Rick Carlisle real quick. Rick Carlisle is the Dallas Mavericks head coach in the NBA. He was disappointed in ESPN because ESPN aired a story that LaVar Ball said the Lakers team had quit on their coach, Luke Walton. Now, Rick Carlisle, I don't mind if you go toe-to-toe with LaVar Ball, if you want to defend your coaching brethren. But ESPN, their duty is to report the news. Not just news that is favorable to you and yours, Rick Carlisle. So let me get this straight. The story wasn't favorable, so we shouldn't report it. You know what that sound like? That sound like Kim Jong-un in North Korea. That sound like what they do, Fidel Castro and Cuba. Yo, that's scary that you believe the news should not be reported because you don't like it. Yo, that's truly scary. I was just thinking the other day how thankful we should be for the media. You know, I'm not talking about any specific channel, whether it's CNN or Fox, but I'm talking about as a whole. Any cause that you probably championing right now, whether it's Black Lives Matter, it's Me Too, or the Trayvon Martin case, like, we only know about that stuff because of the media. So to try and squash it, to think that ESPN owes you something because you guys are partners, yes, they are partners. ESPN pays to air the NBA's games, and that is their partnership. But for Carlisle to jump out there and say shame on ESPN was very disappointing. Carlisle, you all right, man. I got no problem with you. I think you're a decent coach. But that level of delusion that the ESPN owes you something was, man, that's disappointing, bro. That makes me look at you differently from this point on. You know, the reason you guys are compensated so much is not for your X's and O's. It's to weather storms like this, to deal with the public. And let's keep it 100. LaVar Ball is the father of a player on an NBA team. That is news. Whether you like him or not, ESPN should have reported that story. And you need to put your big boy pants on and just deal with it. And if you want to go at LaVar Ball, go at him. But not ESPN. Oakland Raiders got themselves a new coach. They hired John Gruden. They signed him for 10 years, $100 million. Yo, when I saw that, I thought of that Chris Rock skit on In Living Color. Good Lord, that's a lot of money. Many people question, yo, is he worth it? And what do I think? I think in the U.S. of A, in the United States of America, you are worth whatever the hell you can convince somebody to pay you. You are worth whatever you can negotiate. So good for him. You know, I like to watch Pawn Stars on History, and I watch people pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for little coins and artifacts. Hey, the reason that stuff is worth that money is because somebody's willing to pay it. And in this case, the Raiders are willing to pay him. And really, what is worth? Worth is a subjective term. The people, the situation determines the value of something. How much is a bottle of water now in the corner store? A dollar? But let's say you were stranded in the desert and you hadn't eaten or drank for days. How much is that bottle of water worth to you now? You'd be willing to give everything you have for that. And that may be the situation the Raiders are in. You know, the Raiders are owned by a man named Mark Davis. He inherited the team from his father, Al Davis. Al Davis was much respected, but Mark Davis doesn't really get that much respect around the league. Amongst the 32 owners, or he's considered kind of like the runt of the litter. You know, Jerry Jones, we know him, the esteemed businessman, oil man. Robert Kraft of the New England Patriots. Arthur Blank, Home Depot, Atlanta Falcons. Mark Davis doesn't carry that cachet. So to bring in somebody, a football mind like John Gruden, that is respected, to give his organization maybe some credibility, that may be worth $100 million to him. And Mark Davis also, he never really fancied himself as a football mind. He really likes more the business side. So if he can bolster the football IQ of his team by bringing in John Gruden, that could be worth $100 million for him. And another thing, the Raiders are set to move to Las Vegas in 2 years. So many fear that the Oakland fan base is just going to wash their hands of Oakland for these next 2 years. Like, why would I show up to the stadium if y'all leaving us anyway? But John Gruden, that's a sexy hire. John Gruden is a charismatic dude, somebody that'll get the fan base riled up, keep the fan base engaged. Isn't that worth some money? You know, John Gruden convinced the guy, come on, come back to the stadium. In fact, how about y'all follow us to Vegas too? I know you live in Cali, but come out 2, 3, 4 times a year. So to the Raiders, John Gruden might be worth $100 million. Maybe not to the rest of the league, but to the Raiders, he might be. And the great Stephen A. Smith, the ESPN, he's been very critical of the move. I had the pleasure of meeting Stephen A. Smith early this year, so no hate, but I'm going to have to disagree with him on this. In fact, when he talks about John Gruden, he talks about the Super Bowl championship that he won with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. John Gruden used to coach the Buccaneers. And Stephen A. tries to kind of discredit that championship by saying, well, John Gruden was the head coach, but that team was heavily influenced by their previous coach, who was Tony Dungy. Stephen A. Smith says, had Tony Dungy been coaching that team, they would have still won that championship. Let's say that theory is correct. Let's say, okay, that was really Tony Dungy's team that won that chip. John Gruden was just the figurehead. Let's say that is true. Do you know who the Tampa Bay Buccaneers beat in that Super Bowl? They beat the Oakland Raiders. Do you know who was coaching the Oakland Raiders the year prior? It was John Gruden. So according to Stephen A.'s theory, if he believes Tony Dungy's influence got the Buccaneers to that championship, then John Gruden's influence got the Raiders there as well. You follow? So even if you don't want to credit him with the Tampa Bay success, you got to at least give him the Oakland Raiders success for being there in that same chip, right? And people talk about John Gruden has been away from the game for too long. Listen, John Gruden is not somebody that is in a studio. He calls Monday night football games, which means he's on the road traveling, which means he's out and about scouting players, talking to coaches every week. You know, I've done some limo work for CBS, and when their crew comes in, their broadcast crew, when they come in, they have a weekend of activities. They don't just show up for the game. They go to the practice facilities and watch the team play. They talk to the team's head coach, assistant coaches, star players. They do that for both teams for that game. So John Gruden's been doing that for years, all types of teams all throughout the league. They wonder if he can connect with today's players. Yo, have you ever heard John Gruden call a game? He thinks everything is the greatest thing he's ever seen. And that's what today's players like. They like to be patted on the back. Now, I think John Gruden will be fine. That's my episode for the week. Follow me on Twitter and check out my YouTube channel at WBH Radio. Thanks for listening.